Welcome to Crime Suit Podcast. I'm your host, Kaylee Carter.
And I'm Hannah.
And we're your new best friends.
Every Tuesday, tune in for a new episode of Crime Soup with host Kaylee Carter and writer-producer Hannah Canapis as we discuss all things true crime.
From cold cases to cult leaders, we've got you covered.
So sit back, relax, and join us each week wherever you get your podcasts.
Life in this tidy Kashina home began to unravel nearly a month ago when 19-year-old Ray Elaine Turtelo simply disappeared. She was a popular student. 2 years ago, the Menominee Indian princess, and 2 months ago became a mother. Her family says they don't believe she'd leave all that behind.
My gut feeling tells me that there's something wrong. I don't know what to think at this point. That someone did something to her, someone picked her up, and those are the dead-end roads that I go down.
Ray Elaine Tortelot, affectionately called Ray Ray by her family, was born and raised in Kashina, Wisconsin, and belonged to the Menominee tribe. The Menominee are an indigenous people who not only reside in present-day Wisconsin, but have lived in the Great Lakes region for at least 10,000 years. While their territory in the early 1800s included about 10 million acres, the U.S. government reduced this number to 235,000, which is a little more than 300 square miles. Like many indigenous groups, Menominee children were forcibly removed from their homes and sent to boarding schools to learn Western culture beginning in 1860. In the 1950s, the tribe's federal recognition was terminated, and many Menominee between the ages of 18 and 54 had to leave the reservation in search of employment. Here's an account from Frida Bergen about her experiences as a Menominee child.
I was taken to the school, and I was promised that I wouldn't have to stay there. They would come and get me on weekends. So I thought, well, that I probably would be able to handle, but that didn't happen. The missionaries, the teachers, they felt that we should stay there. And the longer we stayed there and the longer we stayed away from our parents, the better off we'd be. And of course, our parents believed that too. It wasn't until years later that It finally dawned on me what had happened to me, that I really forgot who I was. After a while, I even forgot who my parents were. After a while, it got so I can remember one time my mother came to pick me up and I hid.
What the U.S. government did to the Menominee people was a form of genocide, taking entire generations of children away from their parents and slowly killing their sense of culture and identity until they crumbled. Just as we've seen with the American foster care system, children without their biological parents are at a heightened risk of abuse and neglect, often leading to substance abuse and sometimes even death. Currently, in 2023, the homicide rate for indigenous women in America is 10 times the national average, and murder is the third leading cause of their deaths. With that in mind, let's jump to the year 1986 and talk about the Tortelot family. The Tortelot family was a Catholic family of nine living on the Menominee Reservation just 45 miles north of Green Bay, Wisconsin. Bernard Tortelot and his wife Josephine had seven children over the course of 18 years, six daughters and one son. In 1978, the Tortelots faced the first of many tragedies when their 15-year-old son, Peter, died in a car accident alongside two of his friends Memorial Day weekend. the three teenagers died in a two-car head-on collision on Friday night, May 26, 1978. The next of the family's misfortunes came when their daughter Ray mysteriously disappeared when she was 19 years old. Their daughter Ray was born in 1967, and she was everything a parent could want. She was smart, beautiful, popular, and athletic. In 1984, at just 16 years old, Ray won the title of Menominee Princess after competing with other Menominee girls and showcasing her tribe's traditional dancing. When asked about Ray's personality, her cousin Andrea stated, "Ray Elaine was pure joy. She and I grew up together. When we were kids, she lived on the reservation that I loved whenever we could go visit. She was laughing all the time. She was a huge joker and just a really beautiful girl." Ray not only knew how to dance the traditional Menominee dances, but she could also speak their dying language. She loved her tribe's culture and she was devoted to keeping it alive. She was active in her community, played softball on her high school team, and had a steady boyfriend named Bob, whom she'd go on to have a daughter with. After graduating from Menominee Indian High School, Ray gave birth to a daughter in August of 1986 and named her Elise. Just 7 weeks after the birth of her daughter, Ray would make plans to attend a birthday party with five of her friends that would end in tragedy. Like most new moms, Ray was excited for any opportunity to get out of the house and have fun with her friends. It was incredibly cold that night, hovering around 35 degrees Fahrenheit. According to one account from Ray's friends, she asked for a ride home, but instead drove around for a bit before deciding she wanted to come back to the party. After the party dispersed around midnight, Ray was allegedly picked up in a vehicle driven by two individuals, and was reportedly last seen alive after she exited the vehicle near the Tomo Overlook off of Old South Branch Road on the Menominee Indian Reservation. What happened next is a mystery, because Ray never made it home. Ray was reported missing the next day on Tuesday, October 15, 1986, and tribal police organized search parties in the woods and on the reservation, but they found no trace of her after 2.5 weeks. The onset of winter and thick snowfall further debilitated search efforts. All of the people who attended the birthday party with Ray that night cooperated with police, but according to Tribal Police Chief Robert Summers, he believes Ray was the victim of homicide. He has a suspect in mind, but doesn't have enough evidence for an arrest. It wasn't until almost exactly 6 months after Ray was last seen alive that on Thursday, April 9th, 1987, some of her badly decomposed remains were found in the woods in a remote, watery area of the Menominee Reservation. Her mother was able to positively ID her based on the clothing found at the scene.
19-year-old Ray Elaine Turtelot went to a birthday party on that chilly October 1986 night. The next day, she was reported missing.
Turtelot was reportedly last seen alive on this road. 6 months later, they found her body beyond the trees in a swampy area.
Police have treated this as a murder investigation from the start.
Ray's boyfriend, now caring for their baby, is also stunned. He says there was no quarrel between them, no reason for Ray to leave him and their baby.
Because of federal law, Turtelot's case is being handled by both the FBI and Menominee Tribal Police. The case has sat cold for years. Now, Menominee Tribal Police Department's lead detective, Todd Otradovic, is fronting the investigation with the FBI. He started on the case in April 2019. Special Agent Scott Neville represents the FBI.
Unfortunately, in law enforcement, because these investigations are sensitive and ongoing, we can't share all of the information that we have and that we've developed in the case with the family members of the victims. We wish we could, but we can't.
Otradovic says the integrity of the case is important, but so is the family.
I think communication is key with the victims, with Ray's family. And I don't know, from what I get from the family, I don't know how well that was done in the past. I'm not going to point fingers or say it was done or wasn't done.
Investigators say they're doing what they can.
It's easy for people to come to the misunderstanding that we're either not sharing information with each other or that things weren't done properly, when the reality is that if they knew everything that we knew, I don't think they would feel that way at all.
Investigators declined to give more information on Tortolat's case.
Is there anything that you can tell me about Ray's case?
I'm not going to comment on specifics about the case.
Otradovic says there are challenges investigating a case decades later.
We're talking something that happened 30 years ago, and all we have to go on at this point is what's on paper already.
There is a $20,000 reward for tips that lead to an arrest for Tortolat's case. Investigators say they need the community's help.
If you have information, bring it forth and please share it with us, regardless of how small you think it is.
Sierra Trojan, Fox 11 News.
So I looked up exactly what happened, and Ray wanted to go home, so somebody drove her home, but we don't know who drove her home. But when they got to Ray's house, Ray didn't want to get out of the car, so the person then drove her back to the party, but no one at the party recalled what time she got back or when she even left a second time. So presumably she just walked out of the party and tried to get home on foot.
No. Oh. So that's where it's confusing. Everything about the party, it sounds like everyone maybe has a gag order or something. Because no matter where you look, I think the FBI has this pretty well locked down. And I don't think it's a coincidence or just an accident that there isn't really an exact count of how many people are at the party. Some sources say it was her and five friends. Some say it's her and six of her closest friends. They never say whose party it was. They do know where the party happened. It was at a trailer home that was kind of situated out in the woods.
But it was on the reservation, right?
On the reservation, yeah. But the exact count of people and who exactly was with her and what any of their names were has been completely tight-lipped. There is no reference to who these people were, which I'm assuming is because one of them is the main suspect. I'm assuming that one of those people or two of those people are responsible for her death. And it sounds like the police knew immediately after it happened, before they even found her body. If you look at interviews with police, they say in the newspapers that it's a suspected homicide. So before they even found a body, they had to have talked to someone or known something that made them feel like, okay, she's probably dead, and it's probably this person who did it. But since they don't have enough evidence to arrest that person, it's just gone cold this long, waiting for someone with information to come forward.
Okay, so I have a couple thoughts on this. Number one, I guess, Ray's baby, Elise, was being watched by Ray's mother, right?
So I wrote that in the outline initially, and then when I went back to fact check, I actually couldn't find where I found that information. So I actually think maybe I assumed that since she was so young and her mom was being interviewed at the time by the news, in my head I think I might have made up that her mom was the one watching the baby. But that's actually one of my biggest questions, because depending on where the baby was, it changes the entire story. If her mom was watching it, sorry, not it, her.
Yeah.
If her mom was watching the baby, was watching Elise, then I want to know where her boyfriend Bob is.
Yes, that's my biggest question. Why wasn't Bob watching the baby, or was he? Or was Bob with her at the party? So when I first read the outline and I read that Ray's mom had baby Elise, was watching Elise during the party, again, we don't know if this is accurate or not, but my mind immediately went to, is something going on at home that's bad? My first thought goes to like abuse. Was Bob abusive? Did things get worse after Ray got pregnant and had a baby? Because statistically that's accurate. So in my mind, I'm thinking like if I'm mapping out the situation, but that Ray left the party the first time out of obligation because she needed to go home. A lot of people who are in abusive situations have like weird rules and their spouses get really upset when they go out to parties. And so she left out of obligation. She needed to go home, but she didn't really want to. So somebody drove her home, but when she got there, she knew there would be conflict and got scared, didn't want to stay. So her friend drives her back to the party. And the second time she left, she leaves out of fear, like knowing there's going to be conflict, knowing that she's going to have to deal with it, and realizing it's going to be worse because she stayed longer.
So that's actually a really good theory. My only problem with it is that it sounds like her body was found really close to where the party was. So if it was a fear of, like, she didn't want to go home and she was killed at home or something like that, it seems weird that she would end up back out in the woods close to where the party happened.
Well, my thought is that if Bob is the perpetrator and he was abusive and this is the what happened or similar, right? Bob got angry, went to go pick Ray up because we know that she got in the car with two men before she was last seen alive. And
it didn't say two men, did it? It just said two people, and I don't know what their genders were. Partway through the party, she tells everyone that she's ready to go home, and someone takes her back to her house. She doesn't get out. She instead says, no, I want to keep hanging out. So they actually just drive around for a bit, and then they come back to the party. It sounds like that was with one person, from what I can tell. And then at the very end of the night, around midnight, reports say that she got into a car with two individuals, and they claim, yes, we took her home, we dropped her off at this location near her house, and that's the last time we saw her, but she was alive and well, and we drove away. Okay, so we already talked about the ambiguity, kind of the unknown factors, because there's a ton of unknown factors about this case, like who was with her, how many people were with her. But it sounds pretty obvious, I would say, to me, that police knew immediately, even before they found her body, that she was most likely murdered, that they had a suspect but didn't have enough evidence to arrest them, and that I think is still true today. Also, in the audio that I played earlier where the news reporters were talking to the tribal police and the FBI, the FBI agent specifically said, I know it seems like not a lot of information is known about this case and people are falsely assuming that not a lot is known, but he specifically says, if people knew what we know, they wouldn't feel that way, which makes me think that they actually have a lot of information and they probably know who did it. And it's just they're waiting until someone comes forward or they get that one tip that rolls in that can finally solve the case, which is probably very frustrating.
I went to a missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls protest once, and they cited specifically that, you know, there's a lot of pipelines that go through tribal land, and so there are a lot of non-reservation men on the reservation working on pipelines, living on reservation land because they're working daily at the pipeline, right? There's a spike in when girls go missing when pipelines get installed on reservation land, so that these men are coming onto their land, murdering and sexually assaulting the women and girls who live on the reservations.
I mean, literally, that's like that's a huge part of the history of our country going back hundreds of years. Like, just think about Lewis and Clark.
Yeah.
White guys, for work reasons, traveling across the United States and then abusing Native women along their route.
That's just the history of the whole United States.
That is the history of the United States.
That's it, right there. Just
like, you probably already know this, but I learned about it recently and I was just gobsmacked. I wasn't shocked because I think human nature hasn't changed, like, ever. But when Lewis and Clark were trekking across the United States, I think they were called beryllium pills. Did you hear about beryllium pills?
No.
So there was like a really hokey pill that was being boasted as a cure for, like, I think it was a specific STD. It was like gonorrhea or something, mm-hmm. which I guess was rampant at the time. And these hokey pills were called beryllium pills. And I'm going to Google it really fast, but I think they're like straight mercury or something.
Oh my God.
Hold on. Let me make sure I'm getting this right. Okay.
Is it copper?
This is from the official, like, lewisandclark.org. Okay. Okay. They were called Rush's bilious pills. They were mercury chloride pills. So essentially, these pills were boasted as, like, a cure for either, not a cure, but I think they were just supposed to like help prevent or help
treat the symptoms,
reduce symptoms of STDs. Here's the thing. These guys didn't have STDs before they started their trek, but they essentially knew going into it that they're like, we're not going to be able to go on this months long journey without having sex with somebody. So they already knew in advance, like, we are going to have sexual relations with these native women. And they're like, and we know that we're not going to make it out of the trek without some sort of STD. So instead of just being abstinent, they're like, instead, we know that we're going to contract an STD. We're going to take these horrible pills that are like straight mercury. And then those beryllium pills cause them to have this like horrible cramping diarrhea. And so they like shat their way across the United States. And to this day, you can still track their exact route because there's like heavy levels of mercury where they shat all the way across the United States. I probably butchered that story and I'm sure I got some of the facts wrong, but you get the gist of it.
Why are white people allowed? Honestly,
okay,
I'm
no, but
sick of us.
This is a testament to the idea that like anytime white men go anywhere... They cannot remain abstinent.
You have a hand for a fucking reason. Please, for the love of God, use it. Like, I...
But, like, when you talk about the pipeline, I'm just saying it's exactly what Lewis and Clark were doing.
So they kidnap women and girls from the reservation. Yes. Like, we haven't already done enough to the indigenous people of the United States. Like, why... Oh, my God. So it looks like the reason there, because I looked it up as we were talking, the reason a lot of indigenous peoples along their journey had syphilis specifically was because...
Oh, that's what it was, yeah.
Previous encounters with French and British traders who came into the area before Lewis and Clark had infected a lot of the women who lived in these tribes. And mm-hmm. So it was, I guess, Lewis and Clark and lots of people just knew... People in the...
They knew that all the native women, or most of them, were infected.
Yes, which is absolutely fucking... Makes me so mad, because it was the white men who did it in the first place, right?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I hate it here.
Do you want to talk about... do you have any theories about maybe the specific of Ray's case? Like, why do you think she was found where she was? Why do you think she was killed when she was? Do you think it was a crime of opportunity? Do you think it was a crime of passion? What about the case? Like, how do you understand it? And what do you think happened?
My main suspicion is still that she was in an abusive relationship, that maybe it was with her boyfriend at the time, Bob. Maybe it was with somebody else.
But then why would this all come to a head at the exact time that she's at a birthday party?
I'm assuming there was conflict between her and her boyfriend.
Why, though?
No real reason. None whatsoever. I have nothing to go on. I'm just automatically suspicious. He's not mentioned at all at any point, which makes me feel suspicious toward him. We have...
So he was interviewed and there was like the tiniest little almost nothing quote by him where the news reporter was interviewing him right after she went missing, before her body was found.
Uh-huh.
And they quote him as saying that there were no quarrels between them and he doesn't know why she would disappear or run away.
Yep.
Ray's boyfriend, now caring for their baby, is also stunned. He says there was no quarrel between them. No reason for Ray to leave him and their baby.
That makes me even more fucking suspicious. Yeah, yeah. So that's the only thing we saw from him at all. Like, being interviewed, speaking out about it. Like, nobody has quoted him except for that. And that's...
Yeah.
That is very strange to me. Unless it wasn't him and they were just already having conflict, which that sounds like they were having conflict.
But here's my question. If it's true that there were two people, because this is what the FBI has said, is that two people claimed to have dropped her home and that was the last time they saw her. Do you think they dropped her home and Bob was home and those two people aren't involved at all, that they just did their due diligence, they dropped their friend off at home, they're completely innocent. She was dropped home where Bob was with the baby and he was upset about her staying out late, killed her. But if he's got a baby with him,
that's,
do you just put the baby in the car and take the baby with him while he's hauling her around or hauling her dead body? Or
you know what I mean? So my other theory is that it was her friends. And have you heard of Tamla Horsford?
No.
Okay, so she was a black woman who she had a friend group of all white women, and I cannot remember how many of them there were. I think there were like 6 or 7 white women. She was the only black woman in this friend group. She went to, there's a lot of strange factors about this case, but she went to like a girls' night, a sleepover, and these were all adult women.
Oh, I do remember this.
And she fell off of the, what's it called, a deck, mm-hmm. and died. And nobody knows how, or nobody noticed at all, and nobody called the police until the next morning, right? And there's a lot of super, super sketchy things surrounding this. So, and then my mind directly goes to something like that. Like, she had potential beef with some of her friends, and they were mad. I don't know why they'd be mad.
What I'm picturing in my head that may not be accurate is that usually with parties, it's like it starts to dwindle. Like as the night goes on, more and more people leave until there's just like a few stragglers.
Mm-hmm.
So in my head, I pictured that like by the end of the night, there were only 3 people, possibly 4 if you count the person who owned the trailer, and that there were only 2 people left. They took her home, right? But actually, now the more that we talk about it, your theory about Bob actually does make more sense, that maybe he was very upset that she stayed out too late, especially since they have a baby,
mm-hmm.
because that baby has to eat every 3 hours tops. Like, I don't know very many newborns that go more than 3 hours without eating.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how long the party was, but when I first read through it, my first theory was that the reason maybe that she left the party or was planning on leaving the party early was because maybe she had to breastfeed.
Mm-hmm.
Because the baby adds such a weird, it throws a weird wrench in this story, because being the parent of a newborn, usually you can't go to parties and usually you don't go to parties. You wait until your baby maybe is 6 months before you really can, even then you can't get a babysitter because they're just so young. And if you're breastfeeding, which I don't know if she was, when your milk comes in, like, you are in intense pain after only a few hours if you don't breastfeed. Like, you have to express that milk. So, like, going to a party for more than a few hours, eventually she would be like, I'm in pain, I have to go home, I have to nurse my baby. Or I have to pump, whatever.
Is it possible she pumped while she was in the car the first time she left, and then,
That would explain why she said, oh, we drove around.
Yeah.
Because she may have just been like, well, this is awkward, and one of her female friends is like, let's go on a drive and you can...
Yeah.
Pump, right? Mm-hmm. I have no idea. But the fact that she has a newborn just makes this very odd, because someone had to be watching the baby and I don't know who it was. I don't know whether or not she was breastfeeding or lactating, and whether or not she could have gone that long at the party without needing to express her milk, without being in pain. Also, like, one of the most dangerous times for a woman is when she's pregnant or has just had a baby, if she's in an abusive relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Because pregnancy and having a newborn exacerbates abusive relationships. So if she was in an abusive relationship, then like right now, as she's got a 2-month-old and she's out late with her friends, this could be the peak time to really anger an abuser.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, all of our theories are based on a whole lot of nothing and a whole lot of questions. But either way, her body was found in a remote watery area. So whoever killed her had to be able to move her body. Like, to a remote location.
And she was a very small person. Like, even I could probably carry her. She was something like 5'3", 100 pounds.
Yeah, but dead weight is still a lot. Maybe not for, like, a big person. But
this does tell us, though. So it was described as a remote, watery area. One report said that it was a hunter who found her, and she was found near some beaver dams.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes me think that someone put her in a river, and the reason that she was found at the dam is because her body got caught.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it got tangled up in the dam.
Yeah.
Which means that the person who killed her was trying to conceal what they had done.
Yeah. Which then leads me back to the thing that Bob said.
That is interesting, because based on his response, it sounds like he's not even entertaining the idea that she's dead or that something malicious happened to her. He's saying, I don't know why she would leave us. So he's assuming that she ran away. And why would he jump to that conclusion?
If my husband disappeared after I had a baby, just because of the relationship that I have with my husband, I would never think that he abandoned us. Maybe that is a reality for some people. Maybe I'm sure that is for a lot of people. But I'm in a really healthy relationship, and my first reaction would not be, he left us. My first reaction would be, something happened to him and I'm scared. I'm worried. And
exactly. That's the exact same with me.
Switched around with your small wife, right? Maybe she wasn't happy in the relationship and she talked about leaving him and they were fighting a lot, right? And so maybe his first reaction was that she ditched him. But even then, how long had she been missing when he gave that interview? Like my first reaction would be, oh my God, that something must have happened because I don't think they'd run away.
Yeah, that's true. Honestly, like if you're in a healthy relationship, if Nathaniel didn't come home, I would not jump to he ran away. I would jump to like something bad happened and I need to find him. He might be at the hospital.
Yep. I'd be calling hospitals. I would be checking police reports. I would be anything I could because my first reaction would not be that he ran away.
Interesting. Okay, Kaylee, you brought up a lot of good points that I had not thought about the first time through. I'm glad we had this chat. Because I went through it and I was like, Bob's probably fine. And you're like, no, he's not.
Side eyes Bob aggressively.
Poor Bob. If he's innocent, then...
I'm very sorry if he's innocent. I'm very sorry.
Poor man, yeah.
But I feel like it's... Whoever's investigating this owes it to Ray to look into people that were closest to her.
Well, because let's theorize, if it wasn't Bob, there's only so many motives for a murder. Mm-hmm. Like... there really aren't that many. They tend to repeat themselves over and over again. It's usually just like revenge, anger, lust, greed, you know, all the seven deadly sins. If it wasn't, because more likely than not, like statistically, it's going to be her romantic partner, especially since she's extra vulnerable as an Indigenous woman. Plus, she just had a baby. So she's at high risk for like interpersonal violence. But let's say theoretically that the stats are off, that actually she was in a great relationship and Bob was a really great partner and he doesn't know what happened to her and he's just dumbfounded. And someone at that party or someone related to that group of friends killed her. What was their motive? Mm-hmm. Why were they killing this mom who just had a 2-month old baby? Like, what did she do to piss someone off?
So I assume whoever was driving the car that she got into for the last time was somebody she knew. So it was either her friends, her boyfriend, or an acquaintance, maybe somebody on the reservation or in town that she knew.
Here's what it boils down to, Kaylee. It's one of two things. According to the FBI, there were two people who claimed to have driven her home that night. And these two people both collaborated and said, yes, we dropped her home at the end of the party around midnight. The only two options that we're left with are either, one, they're telling the truth and something happened to her once she got home or on her way home. Mm-hmm. Or two, they're lying and they're the ones probably responsible for her death.
Bob and a friend makes sense, but also two of her friends make sense.
Damn. I don't think I've ever had, maybe. I was going to say, I've never had two close friends that want to murder me, but maybe I have. They just didn't tell me.
Maybe they weren't even close friends.
It could be just as simple as two skeezy guys.
Yeah.
Like, molested her at the party and then killed her and then told police, like, yeah, we took her home. And police are like, you look like two skeezy dudes.
Maybe, yeah.
Because that would be the first thought going through my head if I was a police officer. I'd be like, you look skeezy.
There's no physical evidence linking them, obviously, or else they would have been arrested.
And putting a body in water is a telltale sign of trying to destroy physical evidence on that body that would convict you. Mm-hmm. Like in Mary and Susie Raker's case, when Mary Raker was thrown into the quarry, she was most likely sexually assaulted, and water would help hide that and destroy the DNA evidence. Mm-hmm. So the placement of her body into the river, Ray's body into the river, makes me think that they were, one, either trying to like make her body disappear, or two, that they were trying to hide evidence, destroy evidence that would convict them, or both.
And I didn't see anything on this, and maybe it wasn't even possible to get this type of information. That's why they didn't report it. But there's nothing that said she was sexually assaulted. Right.
They didn't even find a body. They found partial remains. It had been 6 months. I think she was mostly bone. And actually, her own mother couldn't identify her. The only way she was identified was through the clothing that was found with the remains. And her mom was able to say, like, yeah, those are my daughter's clothes.
Sad. I hate people.
But why did they go to the mother to identify the clothing and not her boyfriend?
Probably because as a boyfriend, you don't have the same rights, I would imagine.
Oh, because you're not like next of kin.
Yeah. Like if he were her husband, yeah, that makes sense. But
I don't even think my husband could identify my clothing if he saw it. He'd be like, is this Hannah's? And he'd be like, looks like something she might wear.
You think?
Yeah. I don't even own that much clothing, but here's the problem, and this is what you should think about if you're planning on getting murdered.
Okay, I'll write this down.
You should wear unique clothing. Literally every piece of clothing that I own is just plain and black.
Oh, you're screwed.
Every day I wear the same shade of black and maybe sometimes gray. My shoes are black, my pants are black, my shirts are all black.
I mostly do that. I have a couple of wild outfits, so if I'm going out planning on getting murdered, I'll just wear the wild ones. Noted.
Going out planning on getting murdered. You gotta factor those things in.
I mean, it's not far-fetched.
If someone found my body, my husband would be like, yeah, she would wear that. She would wear a black sweater similar to that, like the other 9 black sweaters that she owns.
That's why you gotta get a tattoo.
Yeah, that's true. A really distinct tattoo that no one else has. It's like she's got Woody Woodpecker tattooed on her butt. That's her.
What kind of human does that? I need to meet them. Is that you? Would you do that?
Get a tattoo on my butt?
Of Woody Woodpecker?
I mean, you gotta get a tattoo of something. Might as well be Woody Woodpecker.
You have the opposite attitude of most people.
I'm thinking ahead, Kaylee. Like, you've got all those pretty flowers, but, like, are those going to be distinct enough?
I think my wedding song is distinct enough.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
Right?
Yeah.
And my flowers are matching with my sister. So, like, I don't know. It's probably the exact same as somebody else's, but it's the exact same as my sister. So she could be used as, like, a reference point. If you have any information regarding the murder of Ray Tertelot, you are encouraged to contact the Milwaukee Field Office of the FBI at 414-276-4684. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Crime Soup Podcast. Be sure to find us on social media and let us know your thoughts on this case. You can find us on TikTok at Crime Soup Podcast and on Instagram and Twitter at crime_soup. We also have a website, crimesouppodcast.com, where you can listen to all of our episodes and buy your very own Crime Soup merch. As always, we'll see you next Tuesday. Stay safe and bon appetit.